Hello, Mind Hive friends. This is another podcast, and it's apparently on International Podcast Day. So we thought we better get a podcast up on International Podcast Day. So here we are. We're talking through our life after death today, and is there a heaven? Is there a hell? All that kind of stuff. Obviously, we don't know. This is all opinion. And hopefully you enjoy the conversation, because I guess, you know, the best kind of conversations are the ones that are genuine. So we've got a few questions here. We're not claiming to have all the answers, but we do have something to say. So listen up, enjoy Life After Death. So do you believe in life after death?
And the answer to that, because we talked about that, and I like being honest. I like being completely, you know. We just had this great conversation. We thought, you know what? We should podcast that, because that's the podcast. But the answer is, yeah, I do. I do. And what's my reason for that? We sort of thought over scripture. We went, well, you know, there's a bit where Jesus talks about my Father has many mansions. The word is dwelling places, it's not mansions. And there's this promise of life. I don't know about the word promise, but there's this life beyond this life. And I think we've had a bit of an awakening in the church that for a long time it seemed that we'd put up with all this crap because we're going to heaven. And we ended up in this sort of fatalistic drive into nothingness because we went, well, it doesn't matter if this is crap because we get to heaven, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's the mentality that
gives you ticks me off.
Like, yeah, it ticks me off.
Like, it just squanders our inheritance, doesn't it?
But also, like, it kind of belittles, like, the greatness of life that we do have, you know, like this life right now is such a gift. Like, we didn't do anything to deserve this way of life. And there is just so much beauty all around us. Mm. You know, sometimes we can put the focus on, you know, life after death.
Yes.
But we miss living right here and now.
Yeah. It's a really scary mentality to rush past life and go, well, it doesn't matter how bad things get because I've got this great reward. Now, that may be true, but I think you're right. I think that Jesus says, you know, live every day. Don't worry about tomorrow. Don't get too fussed about tomorrow. And I teach, you know, teaching philosophy and ethics, teaching my students. My challenge is don't live on the horizon, is the way I put it, is that, you know, on Friday there's a party. I'm going to go to the party and it's been great. I said, sure. We look forward to the party and then we look forward to leaving school and then we look forward to getting into uni or getting into TAFE. And then we look forward to getting married and then we look forward to getting a job and then we look forward to, you know, getting divorced and leaving our job and getting a better job and looking forward to that trip and we're always looking forward. We're always looking at the horizon. It's what keeps us sane.
Yeah, there's something great about anticipation, but if you always live in that, then you lose a depth.
It's a pseudo hope. It's not the real hope. The challenge I'm really wrestling with is I want to live each day as each day and not look forward to tomorrow. And it sounds really nihilistic, but for many, many years, you know,
can you
I've
just
always
explain,
looked forward.
Sorry, let's nihilism? Pause. Yeah, what's nihilism?
Nihilism says that there's no God, fundamentally, and therefore there's no ultimate plan, and life has no meaning. There's no meaning to life. And the reason I said that sounds nihilistic is that in going, I don't want to think about the future, it sounds like I'm saying, oh, there's no point thinking about the future because there's no point. The future, it's not that at all.
Yeah.
I really agree with what you said earlier about to live is a privilege. If we could be stripped away of sight and hearing and we're made to sit in a room in the darkness with no communication, it'd be terrifying. Even 12 hours of that would be singularly terrifying. And then to come out of that and see the trees and see the road and see the blue sky or the grey sky or the, and then see the face of a loved one, we would drink that in. To see our children again, we would be overwhelmed. You know, I mean, when I've confronted death, my thoughts become crystal clear on my wife and my children. All I care about is them. And these are the very things that we rush past in our existence because we're looking on the horizon. We're looking, you know, and I don't want to scare people. I don't want to upset people. But I think, you know, this is what I'm learning from St. John of the Cross and various other Christian wisdom is to go, when Jesus says, live each day, don't fuss about tomorrow, is we want these guarantees about tomorrow. It's like the temptation in the wilderness where Satan takes Jesus up to the highest point and goes, jump off and let the angels catch you. And the temptation there is to go, let's just check that God's in your corner. Let's just check God's going to save you at the end of the day. Jesus is going, don't put God to the test. I don't need any guarantees. It's my relationship that's fundamental. And we still have a fear of death as Christians. We don't really believe. And this is where our fantasies, our deep desire for heaven comes from.
Yeah, I mean, like within the Bible, like heaven isn't really painted very clear. I mean, in the Old Testament, there's something a few times described as, I think they call it Abraham's bosom, which is funny.
Giant boob of a man.
But it's kind of like a holding place before we get to greatness. And then Jesus drops a couple of little hints here and there, and we've kind of just blown that out of proportion, I think, because we don't know. But you know, he'll talk about that story of Lazarus.
Lazarus, right. That's great.
You know, he's in hell, and it's like kind of like just a bit of a too late, and so much theology. Well,
really, it's about how you treat the poor, isn't it? That one.
Yeah, but it was like, too late.
Go back and tell my brothers.
Yeah, yeah. So that, you know, they can get it right in their life.
Yeah, and then, so they don't end up in this place.
Too bad. Like, you know, so it's that's the kind of the turn or burn kind of mentalities all come out of that one parable.
Yeah. It is a terrifying
parable. Oh, and probably a bit of revelation, but that's another
thing.
There
is a big lake, and there's a fire from my recollection.
Yeah, like there's a metaphor of that. So,
interestingly, he destroys that.
But really... Yeah, the lake of fire gets destroyed.
Which N.T.
and,
Wright,
and
Thomas Wright points
that out. And there's also another reference to fire after death.
Gehenna, is that what Jesus talks about?
A refining fire.
No, I don't think that's a reference to hell. That's.
I thought it was in the Old Testament.
It's in Malachi, it talks about a fire, that the day of fire. And then John the Baptist talks about... the branches that are useless are cut off and thrown in the fire. And Jesus talks about that as well. But Jesus talks about if your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. If your eye causes you to sin, cut it out, cast it into the fire. So it's better that you lose that than end up in the fire. And he uses a very particular and strange word, Gehenna, I think it is. And it's a valley outside Jerusalem where they used to burn the refuse. It's caused endless debate. It's a dump. That's right. It's a dump. It's not a reference to hell, you know. But again, we get into this. It reminds me of a conversation I had with my students where we talked about boundaries. And a lot of people look at boundaries as, a party pooper. It's like, oh, man. You know, there's all these rules. I said, well, I gave him this metaphor. It's like a childcare center on a cliff. And this childcare center has this amazing view. And the reason it has an amazing view is it's about, you know, 20 stories above the coast. It's built on a cliff. There's a big grassy paddock. Halfway through the paddock is a fence. And the fence works its way around the childcare centre. And the kids play happily in the fence with amazing views. But they're warned. Kids, look, just don't climb the fence. Don't go over the fence. And what we find is you climb the fence, there's very strong winds and you could get blown away. And so in talking to my students about it, it's to understand that the boundaries in our lives, the kind of rules, if you like, are to keep us from falling off the cliff, to keep us from heartache and trouble. So I think in terms of hell, we want to know what can I do up to but not including damnation, which tells you, of course, that you haven't really come to terms with God, that you're really going, what can I do to end up in hell? It's like, if you're asking that question, I don't think you've heard the gospel. I think what you've heard is legislation. I think what you've heard is punishment. I think what you've heard is there's a guy with a beard, he's lived forever, he's got a stick, and he will throw you into hell.
Which is a big version of a human.
Absolutely. It's idolatry.
Yeah.
That once you get a glimpse of Christ and a revelation from the Father of Jesus Christ, he's so attractive and so, you know, you're like, why wouldn't I hang out with this guy? Why wouldn't I be with this person? And the deeper you go into the understanding of it, the more it comes into alignment with true life. It's not about religion. It's not about doing the right friggin' thing all the time. It's about life lived. It's about living in the moment and embracing the fullness of what we're called to be as human beings.
Which is funny because for me, like, I've found that there is a real fullness, like that kind of life to be lived kind of fullness, found in within, and I'm using the word religion, like I've always cringed at that word religion. For me, like growing up, I've always been like, no, God isn't religion, God is relationship, and kind of put the two very separate. But there are practices that I can bring into my life which really help me focus on how to do relationship really well. And the discipline of day in, day out, whether it is meditation or contemplation, or whether it is prayer, or whether it's just being vulnerable with those people around me, like those disciplines can be seen as religious, but for me, they're actually bringing me like life to the full.
Yes, yep.
And so there's this flip that has happened within my understanding of religion, as Justin's playing with a Harold the helicopter toy.
It's wooden. I thought it was plastic. It's beautiful wood.
There is a few bits of plastic on it. And it so nice. That has kind of flipped my understanding of religion. Like for so long, I've really pushed it away as the opposite of relationship. And recently, I've found the beauty in it.
Mm.
As far as it's bringing me a better, wholer, yep, experience, and in turn, a greater relationship.
You hear that in Richard Rohr's interview on The Liturgist, where he taps into the Catholic tradition, which as a, you know, I mean, I've walked in a few churches, you know, from Pentecostalism, Protestant, you know, I mean, it's all Protestant what I've engaged in. But the Catholics were always painted as somehow, well, they don't really get it, do they? You know, type of thing. And I'm not even adequately explaining it. No one will ever.
I understand that. It as well, because that's the kind of viewpoint that I've come from, right, as well. Like, there's Christians and then there's Catholics.
Yeah. Well, I found Richard Rohr. He really goes the tradition, the religion, you know, it has something to offer.
Yeah.
I think that's, I mean, I do think that's wonderful. I think that's a you know, it's that profound thing about God is where you think, you know, you think you know something, and then you're like, oh, hang on, champ, you've been a bit judgmental there. You know, Richard Rohr is a real enlightener in terms of those sorts of things. And, you know, tapping into St. John of the Cross, I'm pretty sure St. John is Catholic in terms of tradition. I mean, he predates the Reformation.
Well, he's a saint.
Okay.
Yeah. They're usually the Catholics.
St. John of the Cross. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I don't know.
I hadn't thought of that. But, yeah, he predates.
Is there any other denominations that...
we got Greek Orthodox.
Saint people?
I think, I don't know about Greek Orthodox, but it's as big as the Catholic tradition and as ancient. It actually predates the Catholic tradition, and we know nothing about it, but it's huge, huge. But going back to your original question, do I believe in life after death? There's a really good book I'd recommend called The Great Divorce by C.S. Lewis. And I just think it's easy read. And it raises questions about that. And I think Lewis is a voice worth listening to.
Mm.
Mm, that would be my...
Yeah, well, I guess like I'm coming to a place from that whole traditional view of heaven. Like, you know, you're either in or you're out. You either win in life and get to heaven, or you... You know, you're one of the people who doesn't really, you know, wants to reject God, and therefore you live in hell in eternity. And it's kind of like I don't even know, but I've completely turned away from that
notion.
Yeah. But I guess like there are a few things that we experience in life that you feel that there is more weight to them than perhaps, you know, other people might realize. And those things are when we love and when we experience great depth of kindness and compassion and giving and service. And, you know, those moments that we absolutely live out for other people from a genuine point of compassion. Not just, you know, I'm sacrificing, but a genuine point of compassion.
Yeah.
And wanting to make things better.
Yep.
And there's a fulfillment that comes from that that is just like no other. And I feel like that is the kind of stuff that lives on beyond us. And I feel like those moments where we connect with love, for want of a better term, with love.
No, it's true. It
remains. And the Bible says, you know, there's three things that remain: faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. And I feel like when I live love, that it is an eternal act. And there's something within that which is heavenly for me.
Sure.
And that is beyond our life. And so I don't know what that even can look like, and I don't think we need to find out what that looks like. I'm quite comfortable with the notion of, you know, of not figuring this whole thing out and being uncertain with it. I'm cool with that. I don't really mind.
God's in control.
Yeah.
And I mean, it sounds a bit annoying for me to say that, but I literally think we want a guarantee. And if we want a guarantee, perhaps we haven't considered the goodness of God. Let's leave it up to Him. I'm satisfied with that. I don't really think about heaven that much. It's beyond my comprehension, to be honest. And I just want to conquer today in the sense of to live the fullness of the day in Christ and let the ordinariness of life, you know, embrace that. You'd be satisfied with that.